Hello everyone, welcome to the second episode of Gibberish with Gerard. Before I begin talking about this week's topic, firstly I would like to thank each and every one of you who listened to my first episode and supported my first attempt at the podcast. It really means a lot to me, seriously, and I didn't expect the kind of a reception, to be very honest with all of y'all. I thought it will get like 10 listeners at max, just my friends and my parents and some relatives. But the amount of support I received has only pushed me to work harder and produce better podcasts in the future for all of you. I would also like to thank you guys for the feedback you gave me, be it the positives or the suggestions to improve. I would say both were very important in helping me identify my personal strengths and weaknesses, I would say. So I hope I can slowly but surely rectify my mistakes and make the podcasts better in the future. So that was my long thank you speech to all of y'all. So I guess let's move on to this week's topic, yeah? So my topic for this week is actually based on something that I personally enjoy doing and look forward to it almost every year. Although it is arguably been the biggest industry that has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic this year. Yep, that's right. The topic for this week is travel. So I'm pretty sure some of y'all would have heard of the quote, "The world is a book and those who do not travel read only a page," by Saint Augustine. I personally think that this quote almost entirely encompasses all the reasons why one needs to travel and around the world. And because if you don't, you'll be missing out on a lot of fun and amazing learning opportunities, I believe. So, and the guest that I have on board to talk about travel this week is one of my best friends, who's also an ardent traveler. Together combined, I think we have traveled to about 59 different cities in 19 different countries. So that's a lot. And he's in fact the one who inspired me to start traveling to other parts of the world, excluding India, of course, in 2015, which kind of kick-started my entire traveling spree for the past 4 years or so. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest, who's none other than Santosh. Yay, Santosh.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me onto your second podcast episode.
Yeah, actually, thank you, man, for being the first one to accept my invitation to be a guest on my show. It really gave me a lot of confidence, to go on and invite others to be part of the future episodes, because initially, I was quite skeptical on how everyone would react to the idea of being on my podcasts. So thank you for being a wonderful friend. Actually, by the way, why not you introduce yourself to the audience, those who might not know you?
Yep, okay, sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Santosh, and just a bit about myself. I'll be studying pharmacy at NUS this year, and currently, I'm spending my time by working full-time, temporarily, of course, in a pharmacy.
Oh, that's impressive, man. So Santosh, did you know about the statistic that I mentioned earlier? The fact that we have traveled to 59 cities in 19 countries? Quite amazing, isn't it?
Yep. I think 19 countries is certainly quite a few. But to put it in a wider global context, it's only but a small fraction of all the countries in the world. So there's still so much more for us to find and see. Nevertheless, definitely, it's still a big feat. Especially since many of these trips we planned ourselves for our friends and our families. So yeah, so I think that kind of qualifies us to give some advice on traveling.
Yeah. No, I was actually quite surprised too when I was working out the numbers before this episode. Let's move to our main discussion point for today. So I feel that, in fact, both of us agree that traveling is an art, and if you do not prepare well for it, or you do not know certain tricks and traits on how to approach it, it might not be an entirely enjoyable experience for some. So We kind of decided to give travel tips today based on our previous experience of traveling, and hopefully, we'll be having a healthy discussion, if not a debate, regarding certain points. So let's dive in. So the way we are going to approach this, right, it's going to be we're going to do this in a chronological order of what you will encounter after the idea of planning to go overseas for a holiday. So we will start from planning and we will end it off by looking at attractions and stuff like that. So we will both share our respective opinions on the various aspects of travel based on our previous travel experience, and eventually come up with like a one-liner or 2 lines of a tip for each point, which we will notify you all by ringing a bell for every tip. Okay. By the way, it was Santosh's idea, guys. So if you guys have any feedback about it, of how cringy it is or something,
Yeah, so
I
please
think
let me know.
you guys should direct it to him, no, not me. But
Yeah, I was gonna make it a
yeah.
bit of like a
So
game show kind of thing when you ring the bell. That's the
yeah. So that's his plan.
reason.
So let's start off with our first point of discussion, which is planning for trips. So Santosh, what do you think about planning for trips? Is it important to plan? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that planning is definitely a very important part of traveling. It's usually the best way to avoid wasting time when vacationing, especially when you vacation in expensive destinations. I think that almost all the trips I've gone for have been planned in advance. Yeah, so when usually when you plan in advance for a trip, you avoid wasting time and money in the
Yeah.
destination because you don't end up doing the things that you want to do with your time, and instead of just going there and having a look at what they have to offer. So you will end up
Yeah, that's
going
true.
for things that cater to your interests rather than simply going for things for the sake of going for them.
Yeah, I think yeah, planning really helps in that way. You can know what to do, what you want to do exactly. So then once you go there, you just don't waste time thinking about what to do and stuff like that. You're quite prepared for the trip, and you just be like without worry and tension. Just go there, you know what to do every day, and it's much better than just going there, without any plans. But so I agree with Santosh there. Just always plan in order to enjoy the trip headache free. But I think also, if you are visiting a place for the second time, or you're on this journey to self-discovery or something, I think you can you don't really need to plan in that case. You just go there to explore stuff, based on how it is every day, and you just take it on a day-by-day basis. So I think that's how, planning is. It depends on depends. It really depends on what, you want to achieve in the trip,
But
and so actually,
yep,
Santosh,
sure.
talking about planning, right? When we start planning and stuff, how do you think one should plan? Does someone need to plan, like making sure you put everything in, like all the things that you have to see? Because usually we only get like a 1 week or 2 weeks worth of a holiday, so we might not have enough time to cover every single thing possible, in a big country. So what do you well, how do you advise people to plan that
Okay,
aspect
yep.
of
So
the
I
trip?
think that it's all about striking a balance between pampering yourself versus scrambling to see everything. So I'm not sure, you probably remember when we traveled to Japan just last year, we initially tried to
Oh
plan
yeah.
putting all the very plan down to the very last details. So like putting down where we are going to eat for lunch and dinner and that sort of thing. I think we realized later on that that was going a bit overboard.
Yeah, okay, we did that because we had to convince our parents and give them like a very detailed
It's
itinerary,
kind of like for
so then they
sure.
have like
But imagine
enough
if you
faith in
actually
us.
stuck to it, like that's a bit extreme.
Yeah, I mean that's impossible. I mean, don't do extreme stuff like planning for your. I mean, of course you can plan for like certain restaurants that you want to try, like must go restaurants and stuff like that, but of course, you don't end up planning every single meal of your day. I think that's a bit, yeah. I mean, okay, I agree that we did something wrong there.
So it's kind of like about striking a balance between these two because The main purpose of a holiday is to see the destination, yes, but it's also to have a good time for yourself. And when you schedule yourself to that level, I think it ends up becoming more of like following a timetable rather than experiencing the country. Yeah, so it's as if you never left, you know. Actually, that's one of the reasons why I don't like package tours as well, because they kind of like make you follow this like a rigid
Oh yeah,
timetable.
I think package tours, yeah, they're like extremely, you have to follow their schedule and stuff like that. And if you are really interested in a particular place, you just can't spend more time there. And if you don't like something, you can't just get out of it.
Yeah, maybe they are just for like people who are lazy to plan, so they just like want someone to plan for them and just like follow them.
I mean they do take care of all your all the stress involved in doing the planning, pre-planning of the trip. Yeah, but no, I don't think it's as how to say, you
Because you are
don't.
forced to do what they want instead of doing what you like, catering the trip to your and your travel partner's interests. You end up.
Yeah, that's true. Because everyone might, every single person might have different set of things that appeals to them. So if you're going to follow a tour package, you might not particularly enjoy every single thing there. So yeah, I think as much as possible, do plan for your own trips, and I think that'd be very good. So
That's
actually,
good.
right, to run off to this point, I think another question, right, that I actually read up online, and it's based on is quality of travel proportionate to the amount of money spent? Because some people do believe that you need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars in order to really enjoy your trip, but and I'm not sure how true is that statement. What do you think about
I
it?
think that how much you enjoy your trip is definitely based on what you do and the people you meet and how these align with your own interests. I really feel that way because when you plan to go for experiences that you and your travel partners enjoy, there's a higher chance that you will enjoy the trip, irrespective of how much these experiences cost. So for example, if you and your partner are very interested in like skydiving, for example, that could cost thousands of dollars, for example, for thousands of dollars, as an estimate. So if that's what y'all want to do, then I guess you have to spend money to enjoy yourself. But if you're okay with just going, or if what you are interested in is to go and see nature, climb mountains. Okay, maybe climbing mountains is quite expensive because it requires a lot of equipment. But like, just
Yeah, I mean,
if your interest is just to go and
yeah.
see nature from afar, trekking, that sort of thing, then you can keep your budget quite low. So at
But the thing is, right, not all countries, offer like sightseeing of nature, stuff related to nature, because from my personal experience, I would say when I went to Dubai in 2016, just in a place like Dubai, it's really hard to do stuff for free or like to sightsee stuff for free, for like low cost, because most of the things there are man-made. And even closer to home, in fact, Singapore itself, most of our attractions here are man-made. So if you really want to have a good time, if you really want to see things that it's famous worldwide, you gotta spend that money. So how do you think the countries affect the dynamics involved in spending the amount of money one has to while traveling?
I think that countries, as you mentioned, countries that are more man-made would tend to be more expensive because the attractions usually have higher entrance fees, as you mentioned, Dubai and also Singapore. Based on my experience, when I traveled to New Zealand in 2016, I felt that the cost of visiting attractions was generally lower because most of the attractions involved sightseeing, looking at nature, trekking, that sort of thing. So most of the time it was free or maybe had a low entrance cost. So generally the attractions were not the main expense in New Zealand, it was mainly the cost of living. But when I went to the US in 2017, where majority of the attractions apart from Yosemite were man-made, like theme parks, because I went to California, so it was mainly just theme parks, studios and that sort of thing. So yeah, I think based on these experiences, I can
So it really depends on what the country has to offer, right?
it's really
Because
based on that. I think the whether or not your quality of travel is determined by the amount of money you spend depends on your interest and as well as the country, the nature of the attractions in the country you visit.
Yeah, okay, so I think with that we can go to our first dip. So before doing that, yes, let me give you guys the bell. All right, so tip number one. So I think both of us can agree that planning a trip is essential, and if it's especially a very long holiday. But for weekend getaways or repeat trips, we do not need to worry about planning as much.
Yeah, because you already kind of have an idea of what you are going to see if it's a repeat trip. And it's like just a short getaway to like Bintan or Batam. You are just going for like a spa vacation, that sort of thing. You don't really have to plan because your main motive is just to go there and like enjoy the resort facilities. Yeah. So in these cases, there's not much planning needed.
Yeah, and I think you should also schedule your trip in such a way that it's actually enjoyable and suits your pace preference, because holidays are meant to be like relaxing, and you don't want to overexert yourself or overstress yourself with a lot of things. So I think you have that flexibility while scheduling your own trip, and I think it's also very important to plan the expected spending, because it can vary from country to country depending on its landscape and attractions available. Yeah, so I think that's it for planning for the trip. Moving on, let's talk about second point. This might not be a huge problem, but sometimes we do have the option of traveling to cities with multiple international airports. For example, you have the Heathrow versus Gatwick, JFK versus Newark, or the one in Japan, Narita versus Haneda. In such a scenario, right, how does one make a decision on which airport to fly to?
Okay, based on my experience, right, there are the type of large airports there are in the world do vary considerably. So based on
Right, let's talk about big airports first. So what do you think about those big international airports? Just the big ones, not the small ones.
amongst them there's also a lot of variation, but I think that generally okay not generally rather some of the big airports in the world are really quite and are really not very pleasant to fly into or out of. For example, when I visited LA, I thought the LAX was quite a bad airport, in my opinion. Like there's really it's really the infrastructure is quite bad, and it's also a very small space. You don't feel you don't really enjoy the airport experience. So, but in the case of LA, I guess if you want to fly there, you really don't have any other option, unless you fly through San Francisco, which I think is a bit better. And then go down to LA, but it's still quite far.
Yeah, but that's the thing about big international airports, isn't it? You essentially get more services out from
Oh,
Singapore or
yeah.
into Singapore. So that's what makes it easier to travel, right? Because those smaller airports, even in LA or even for London, for example, we don't fly to Gatwick. I think we only had one service to Gatwick like four
Yeah.
times a week. But I think even now they recently removed it because people weren't willing to take that option as compared to traveling direct to Heathrow.
That is true. Yeah,
So
large airports. If you're not willing to transit, then yeah, you most of the time end up in one of the larger airports because those are the main ones that have direct services. Especially if there are long haul flights.
yeah, but again, the downfall is the cost, because if you want to travel to Gatwick, it's going to be much cheaper than traveling to Heathrow, because larger airports, they tend to have you have greater costs for just parking your
Oh, yeah.
flights, in the airport. And they also have higher demand, because everyone just wants to go there instead of the smaller ones. So naturally, supply versus demand, your prices do go quite high.
Yeah, if you happen to be flying via a transit flight though, like from Qatar, Emirates, passing through a large airport like Dubai or Doha might actually be cheaper than the flying directly to your destination. So in that case, going to a big airport might actually save you money and you get the chance to experience the airport as well.
Yeah, that's true. But then talking about small airports, right? I mean, the biggest advantage for small airports would be, I think, would be the cost factor. Because, naturally the cost would be lower, and stuff like that.
Yeah, like our Japan trip, right? We chose to fly out of the Itami Airport instead of Kansai.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when I was searching for flights out of, Osaka's or Kansai Airport,
Yeah.
it was like almost twice the price of flying out of Itami Airport.
Yeah.
And to us, it didn't really make a difference because we are still going to fly to Haneda, eventually. That's going to be our end point.
Yeah, it's only a 1 for 1 hour flight, so it doesn't really matter. Actually, Itami was quite pleasant. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I think it was pretty, like, everything was quite good about the
Yeah.
airport. But I think the only factor was that it's a bit further away from the city than Kansai, which I
Oh.
think, it's, I mean, okay, that might be a problem for people, who have time restrictions, time constraints.
Yeah.
I feel if you have those, of course, it's better to travel out of the bigger airports because I think they cater more, like, I think it's better accessibility from the city center itself. So I think in such consideration, maybe the bigger airports do well. But I think if you are on a budget constraint and you have the time to spend there, I think the smaller airports would be really good. And this is one fun fact, right? Actually, when they compare all the airports in the world, like small versus big, usually the smaller airports, right, they have better takeoff statistics. So in terms of punctuality, right, they're much better. They perform much better than the larger ones. But again, that's I think really due to the air traffic because it's much lower in the smaller airports compared to the large ones. So I think it kind of makes sense. But I think the smaller airports are also they are good value for money, I would say.
Yeah. I think if you can spare the expense, not sorry, spare the time to travel to the smaller airports, I think it would be more worth it because you will get as you mentioned, you will get a better travel experience because the staff there are more free to attend to you and they're not overcrowded. So you probably will have a better experience, plus you will save a bit of money on the travel on the flight ticket because probably the flights out there are a bit cheaper, not greatly cheaper, but should be a bit cheaper at least, especially for a short flight.
Yeah, so I think we can go to our tip.
Yeah.
Okay, so Santosh, you might want to talk about. So, what's your opinion on this? Because I think we do differ slightly in opinion.
Yeah. I think that for me, I feel that you can fly big airports provide a grander experience for travelers. So I think that you could take big airports. You should take big airports. You take flights from big airports, but only make sure that the airport you're flying out of is really a grand airport, not like LAX or something like that, or something like LAX. So something like so an airport like Dubai, Zurich, Singapore. I think these airports are really worth the experience. They are normally very have a very nice interior. Normally services exceeds expectations, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think I learned something from you today about the small airports having better statistics. I didn't really know that.
Yeah, they do, but if you personally ask me,
Yeah.
right, my tip basically would be that you should always try to fly in and out of the big major airports, because I think the benefits outweigh the disadvantages related to that. But I think yeah, so from the bigger picture, I always feel you should fly in and out of the big major airports unless you really have the time and you want to save money for something more important in your trip. So in that case, you might want to do fly to the smaller airports. All right, okay, cool. So second point is done, and let's move on to the third one, which is about roaming plans. So I think this is one of the biggest dilemmas that travelers usually encounter before, before they travel because they're quite uncertain on how they'll be using their mobile phones overseas, how they're going to get their data, and stuff like that. So Santosh, what do you prefer when you go overseas?
Okay, so for me, generally, based on my experiences, I think that buying a SIM card at the airport or at a shop near the airport is the best option because usually most telcos sell tourist SIM cards, which span over a short period of time but do offer a good amount of data for the short period that you are in the country and will enable you to connect to a local telecom directly. And usually they're not very pricey, about $20 to $30. And they just involve you having to remove your Singapore SIM card and just keep it safely for your trip.
Yeah, but the thing is, right? Okay, I do agree that it's the best option in terms of value for money, but But yeah, I think it might be a headache for some people, you know, if your phone does not have a like a dual SIM capability, because you gotta take out your previous SIM, right? And
Yeah.
a lot of people might have like trouble contacting you know, from your home country because they will not. I don't think everyone will be aware of your new contact number, and the new SIM card does not retain it as well, right?
Oh yeah, I
So.
mean normally WhatsApp and the like would retain the number would remain the same. As in you could still WhatsApp your friends because the device will recognize your that your SIM card has changed but the phone is the same. But if someone tries to call you or SMS you, yeah, that'll be a problem. And you're transacting online also would be an
Yeah, because you
issue.
need OTP and
Yeah.
stuff like that, right? And the OTP is connected to your home number. So just, I mean, that's the issue I have with buying SIM card overseas
I
because,
guess so,
you know,
yeah.
you might not be able to do those stuff.
Yeah, I guess that's a valid point, yeah.
Yeah, but then, okay, the next option we have is the Wi-Fi device. So if you remember, we did use a Wi-Fi
Yeah,
device
in well,
in
Japan last
Japan.
year. I think that the Wi-Fi device, it's actually, how much was it per day? I forget.
I thought it was like $5 a day.
$5 per
That's
day.
great.
Okay, so that means total it was about $50,
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's more worth, you know, if you're traveling as a big group, because if you think about it, right, $5, we had like what, six people traveling, that's like less than $1 per
Yeah,
person.
but I think the concern was okay. At one point, I got split up from the group because I forgot what. I think I didn't run into the train on time,
Yeah,
or something.
because it was slow.
Then yeah, lucky I had my own data. So in that kind of circumstance, because you may end up not being with the person that's carrying the device all the time. So yeah, that is a drawback of the Wi-Fi device. And also, it's basically that you have to like stick next you have to stay next to the guy who has the device all the time.
Yeah, that's true. So I think if you're having a Wi-Fi device, splitting of data is going to be an issue because the device will be with one guy, you know, and he has to follow you everywhere. So
Yeah.
managing that part of the trip might be something a bit difficult.
Yeah, and also it only provides you Wi-Fi, so you don't get to make calls or text messages.
Yeah, that's true as well. So you have that disadvantage across the board, I think. I think across the board that would be a common issue.
No, normally if you change SIM card, you can make calls.
But I think it's not that bad, to be very honest. Like the Wi-Fi device, you know, it does, it can sustain you for like half a day or three quarters of a day, if like you know six of us are using at maximum usage, and unlimited data is another, you know, it's another good thing about it, and you know, it's not that bad because it uses the local, data from the country you're traveling to because it doesn't rely on your roaming data. So in terms of that, I think data quality is also better, coverage is better, and I think there's a lot of positives to it. But I think on the downside, if you're going to split up, that's going to be an issue because you know you have to figure out a way how to split the Wi-Fi between people, and also battery might be a problem lah, like towards the end of the day.
And with this device, the issue of the one-time password also is also true, right? Because you can't receive an SMS because you're not really on roaming.
That's the thing, so you don't need to turn on data roaming, so you can just turn on normal roaming, so you can continue to receive SMS. Because you don't need to turn on
Oh, really?
data
You
roaming.
can.
So your data roaming can be off, but your normal roaming can be on. So your normal roaming will take care of calls and SMSs. Just don't pick up the calls because it's gonna cost you a lot of money. And SMS, I don't think it's a lot. It's like 10 cents max, 15 cents max. So it's not really gonna hurt you. So I think that's
Oh, I see.
okay. That
Okay.
will also be an advantage when you talk about a Wi-Fi device. And so the last one we have, right, while roaming, it's the last option is activate data roaming here in Singapore. So actually, I know that Santosh is not a big fan of that, but I think it's not bad. Okay. Let me get this right. Activating roaming in Singapore, right, depends on which telecom you're using, because because right, I had like a super duper horrible experience with one of the, I should not mention the name, I'm gonna say one of the most leading telecoms in Singapore. Yeah, so I think it was extremely horrible because when we went to Osaka, right, like Santosh and I, we all traveled together, and once we were there, I just had to, I think my iPad was on my flight mode, and I just wanted to switch it off so that I can turn on, so that I can connect it to the local Wi-Fi, you know, at the Airbnb. So I just switched off the flight mode option, and like within the next 10, 30 seconds, you know, I was connected to the Wi-Fi. But in the meantime, you know, I didn't realize that the data roaming was on for my iPad, and I did receive a few like notifications on, you know, some like background apps like Facebook and stuff like that, but I didn't really pay much attention to it, and I also didn't really like think about it that much because it was only like 5 seconds and the data roaming was on, and after which I turned it off because I realized it was running, and it was all okay till I came back to Singapore. And then I was in camp, and one day my mom called me like, I think 3 weeks later. She was like, "Chad, do you know how much was the bill for my phone bill?" And I was like, "Yeah, how much could it be? You know, like $10, $50." Which was like $500. Yeah. $500 for 128 KB usage of data. It's not even MB. It's
Oh my
just
God.
KB. Yeah.
Okay.
You know that KB, right? You can't even load 1 second of a YouTube video or like in 1080p
But
resolution.
actually, it's very strange that you have this experience, you know, because I've been using that same telecom as you for quite long, and I have never had
Oh, the thing
the
is,
same
right, it really
experience.
depends because, right, it's on their footnote, right? They have a lot of these like terms and conditions, and the thing is, we didn't subscribe to data roaming, how to say, like as a plan.
Yeah, before
As a
then.
plan. It's just normally, you know, like automatically activated once you land there. So the thing is, in that thing, right, it's not a plan, it's not a fixed plan on like how much it is per day or something. So they just charge you. It was crazy. They literally say they're going to charge you like $5 per 0.1, like 0.01 MB or something like that. It actually states there. But the thing is, no one actually reads it because it's in a fine print and stuff like that, and no one really realizes it. So I think that was like a huge problem that I had with like local data roaming, but of course I did solve with the telecom. You know, I reasoned it out to them saying that I didn't really use it to serve anything. It was just running. It was just updating the apps on the background, and it doesn't really make sense for you to charge me, you know, for something that I've not really used knowingly. It was really
But and they
un
actually like waived it for you.
yeah. And then they actually waived it.
Oh,
But the thing
okay.
is, right, imagine those people who didn't, you know, didn't have the courage, you know, to make a complaint.
Couldn't find
They're just gonna
the
earn $500 from like nothing, eh? And it doesn't
call
really
center.
cost him to give you like that small amount of data overseas. So just be aware of such things. And but okay, that was a bad story. But I think the good story is, I think if you guys are using M1, you know, which is my local service provider for my phone, I feel that is extremely worth it because M1, right, they have this thing called data passport. So this what this data passport does is, right, it basically converts all your local data to overseas data for like a one-time fee. So it can be as low as like $10 to Malaysia and like as high as like $50, I guess, to US. But it's really worth it because if you have like a 40 GB local data plan or something, you know, you spend $50 and it just gets converted to like overseas data, so you don't need to be afraid of exceeding your normal usage, because I think some telecoms, they are like, they treat it as separate entities and you're only allowed to use 1 GB per day overseas and stuff like that. So I think the data passport is like extremely worth it. I don't know what you think about it, but to me, I think the M1 data passport was like the best option because it's really good in terms of the price and also the quality of data, I guess.
I think yeah, in the case that you mentioned, it does make sense, if you're already using M1 to use this data passport, because it is quite cheap. I think that you mentioned $50 for the US, right? I think that if you yeah, I guess you it help it, paying the $50 will remove the hassle of having to change your SIM card and getting a new number, and then you won't be able to access your Singapore number for anything. I guess paying the $50 to what's that, for that convenience is useful.
Yeah.
But if you do want to if you do want to save money and you don't really care about what's happening in Singapore, you can get a SIM card for cheaper in the country by buying it at the airport.
Okay, so I think it's tip time. So tip number three. There you go. So tip number three is that I'm not a, I would say just try getting the M1 data passport. You know, if you're an M1 subscriber, I think that's the best thing to subscribe and travel using it. But for others, I would recommend the Changi Wi-Fi or any other portable Wi-Fi device on the market, because I guess it serves its purpose for really affordable price, and I think it's like lesser hassles to it. So I feel I personally feel that's the best option. So Santosh, what do you think?
Yeah, for me, I would recommend buying a SIM card overseas. Yeah, that for me, I think is the best option.
Yeah, so you heard it from us. So it really depends on us.
We agree to disagree.
Really depends on what you guys like. All right. Actually, talking about price, right? I think that brings up it nicely brings up a fourth point, which is mode of payment overseas. So you know, there's like so many options nowadays, especially because of electronic payments and stuff related to it. But you know what is usually considered safe? You know, is it cash? And if it's cash, do we exchange it here in Singapore, or do we go overseas and then exchange it there? Or do you think we should just carry our debit and credit cards and just depend on it?
I think that generally, if you should try to exchange the money in Singapore, because most of the time Singapore money changers do offer quite competitive rates, unless when you go there is suddenly a big economic factor that causes the currency rate to change a lot.
Yeah, I think it's better to buy your overseas currency here in Singapore.
Yeah, especially if you're going to like countries, Western countries, because generally I've never seen a retail money changer like in Singapore in a Western country. I don't know why. Maybe it's just I've never seen one, or if they're very few. But in countries like Korea and Japan, there actually are quite a lot of money changers also offering competitive rates similar to those available in Singapore. So maybe if you're going to these countries, you could bring some of your money in Singapore dollars, because I have some friends do that, because they only bring the money in Singapore dollars in case they need it over there. So then when they reach there, then they convert it if they need. If not, then they can bring back to Singapore, bring the Singapore dollars back to Singapore, and then avoid having to pay any money changer fees.
You also don't lose any money, you see, because you're not exchanging the excess
Yeah.
money you have there. Because when you like exchange money and you have excess and you bring it back to Singapore, you
Yeah.
actually lose the you know, you like you lose its value.
Yeah, double, twice.
So that is there. But yeah, I think it's important to study your country's openness to using
Cashless saving.
non-physical modes of transactions, because I don't think all countries are like extremely supportive of using cards, you know, as a main form of payment. Like I feel like countries like, you know, Japan, we went to Japan, they re rely on traditional payment methods, and we didn't use cards a lot, right? We went to Japan, it was just mostly cash.
Yeah. I mean, they did have especially in the major attractions, they did have credit and debit card payments, but I think a lot of the places like the night markets, that sort of thing, roadside the Japan has actually quite a lot of roadside shops. Yeah, these places generally didn't have credit card payments.
Yeah.
But I think even if you're going to a country with a lot of cashless transactions, I think you should still bring cash just for the security.
Yeah, but talking about security, right? There's like two ways to it, right? Because if you bring cash, like if you bring like large sums of money, right? You know, you are like prone, because like some countries when you're traveling, you know, you're kind of prone to like frequent or pickpocketing and like petty thefts. So you know, bringing like cash might be considered as like a risk for some people, as like compared to
I
just
guess
carrying
so.
a card around. Because even if you lose your card, you know, you can just, it's a
Cash.
simple like call a hotline and then they cancel the card for you, so that you know you don't have any fraud transactions happening. So what do you think about it?
I think that credit cards are a bit safer, especially if you're traveling to countries with a lot of pickpocketing, and especially if these countries do have cashless transactions, like in Europe and the US, where the crime rate is relatively high. I mean, not that high, but it is there is a chance that you might be a victim of crime, and the country has wireless and not wireless, cashless transactions, that which are quite widespread in the country. Then I think in these cases, relying on credit cards and debit cards is a wise option.
Yeah, so once again, here it depends on the countries. But here's like a small thing, right? I would say if you're gonna pay with cards, I would say try it's the best to avoid dynamic currency conversion. So I don't know whether you guys have like come across this.
Or is it like when you go to a country, when you pay for like something and then they ask you whether to pay in the local currency or in Singapore dollars?
Always choose the local currency. Don't choose your home currency because right, I think the exchange rate is like I think quite low compared to the ones that the bank will charge you. But then right, the eventual price will definitely be much higher than what the bank will charge you if you just use the local currency there. Because I think the merchant in between, right, they kind of get like a 3% commission or something, so they usually hike up your price. So what appears on your bank statement will usually be higher than what you click on the device itself. So I think that's a important thing to note regarding card payments. So I think with that we can come to our fourth point. Fourth tip, oh, sorry. So fourth tip will be, I think it's best to exchange money here in Singapore. And
But don't exchange too much, Maybe like
yeah, don't exchange too much. Just have a good balance of cash and like balance in your card as well, because when traveling, you do not know, you might not know when you will need which kind of payment. So just be open to both and have a equal split, I would say, in both types of payments. Do you agree with that, Santosh?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree. You should carry both a good amount of money in your credit card, on a credit card, credit or debit card, and in cash, just to be safe.
All right, so that's what we have for regarding mode of payments. Okay, so right, so you have now we have planned, we have decided which airport to fly into, we have purchased our preferred roaming method, we have exchanged money, and now all that is left is boarding the flight, right? But which flight is the best, Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, so let's go systematically. Okay, let's start with budget flights and then move on to the others. So Sanj, what do you think about budget flights? Like, what is your experience, opinion on it?
I think that budget flights, they do offer us ability to travel at a low cost. Personally, I think that budget flights should be mainly for short flights, short to short medium
Yeah,
flights,
that's true.
because having to survive without food and without checked luggage as well would it's a bit difficult for longer flights.
Yeah, like personally, I have been on quite a few budget flights, like Scoot, Air India Express, Southwest, I think who has a EasyJet. So all these flights, and I think my general experience have been quite mixed. Like the Scoot was really impressive, while the others were a bit not to my liking. But I say, these budget flights, right? I mean, they're huge. If their huge selling point is the cheap price. So if money is a huge limiting factor for your trip, or if the flight if the flight experience doesn't matter to you, if it's just about getting from one place to another, then I would say go for the budget flights lah. But that's usually for the I would recommend it for the short to medium haul flights, because I think if it's any longer, you might not really enjoy it because it's going to be a long flight without food,
And then you might end
without
up
entertainment.
paying for all the add-ons, which might add up to the same price as taking a normal flight, like a non-budget flight.
Yeah, that's the thing. So if yeah, there's no point taking a budget flight and you're adding like what 30 kg baggage and like three meals or something. It just makes it. You might as well take a normal flight. It's like a normal
Because the add-ons
carry-on.
are really overpriced on purpose
Yeah.
sometimes.
Yeah, I think they are actively trying to dissuade you from taking those things, but yeah. Okay, so that's for budget flights. Then how about those high-end like luxury flights?
I think that my opinion is the Middle Eastern Airlines win for this category. Emirates
So Middle Eastern as in
Emirates,
Emirates, Qatar,
Qatar. I've never personally flown
Etihad,
Qatar, the Etihad
Etihad.
as well. these three, these three mainly.
Okay.
I've never personally, flown Qatar, but based on what I've seen, it does look quite good. And Emirates, I've personally flown in it. I think that in terms of service, and food, it is quite, it's tied with SQ, but it wins out because of the in-flight entertainment, which I thought that was quite, good. It had quite a big, okay, it had a wider range of in-flight entertainment compared to SQ.
Actually, I don't know because in Emirates, I think it appeals more to us because their in-flight entertainment has more selection of Indian regional movies and like Bollywood.
Maybe,
I think Singapore Airlines like caters to a more wide range of international audience. Yeah, but I think yeah, generally, if you talk about the in-flight entertainment, I would say Emirates does better because they have live sports and I think Emirates' service standards are also pretty good. Like it is like one of the best there because their cabin crew is usually quite diverse. Like, I think they usually have like people who can speak 12 different languages on board every flight. So that, you know, they can like, you know, if you have any doubts, you know, you want to ask in your own mother tongue, you know, that makes it really easy and like easy to communicate with the cabin crew. So I think yeah, Emirates is quite good, but for me, I would say Emirates comes as a close second because I have been a huge fan of Singapore Airlines since young, and yeah, I've been fortunate enough to get like free some slash discounted tickets because of my dad, but I think Singapore Airlines is usually, you know, more reliable, and like they have better food and great service. I think these three is like really good. Okay, I think for the in-flight entertainment system, Singapore Airlines might lose out a bit to Emirates, but I think if you combine all the other factors in, right, I feel Singapore Airlines really gives you a wholesome experience, you know, on a whole, as compared to like those Middle Eastern flights, I would say. So, I mean, that's my personal opinion based on what I've traveled on so far. And then, okay, so that's for high end. And the other interesting thing is transit flights, okay? Because transit flights, right, I think it's quite interesting because it usually gives you a cheaper option to travel to. No, if it's like on the way. Now, I'm not saying like transit from like if you're going flying from Singapore to probably London, you know, I don't expect you to transit in like China or something because it's like out of its way. So in that case, it's going to be like expensive. But I'm talking about a like normal transit, you know, if the transit's on its way. So it's like, so which is why the Middle Eastern carriers become a huge thing because from Singapore, if you want to go anywhere to the, you know, the western side, you know, it's a very good hub and a good transit hub. So I think in that case it's quite good because if you manage to actually put off a long layoff time, you know, in Dubai or in Doha, I think you kind of hit like two mangoes in one stone, don't you? Because you can visit those cities because like cities like Dubai and Qatar, sorry, or Doha, you know, they can be covered in like one day or like 2 days max. So I think transiting in that case might be very helpful and like get to visit more places on the go.
Yep, I do think that transiting does give you the opportunity, does open the opportunity for you to visit the city you're transiting in, especially if you can request for a layover for 1 or 2 days over there. And it's a city that you want to visit. I think
Yeah.
definitely, it does open that opportunity.
So if you have the time to spare, right? Because I think eventually it still boils down to the amount of time you have left. Because if you do not have much time, you know, maybe transiting might not be a great option. So if you're flying to another country and you have both direct and transit options, then I would say go for the direct ones if you do not have much time left in your disposal because you know, it's much faster to get that direct as compared to like transiting.
I'm not sure if it's just me. I generally like to transit. I'm not sure if anyone else feels the same way, but I think that transiting, like, it enables you to have like a stop in the middle, especially if it's a very long flight, and allows you to stretch your feet, stretch your legs, walk around a bit, see the shops over there, see the people over there, see a completely different country from the one you're visiting while on the way, and then getting onto another flight and going to the country that you intend to go.
Actually, talking about long haul flights, right? I think you did have like a quite a bad experience taking a direct long haul flight.
Especially, I think I really regret that because when I traveled to the US in 2017, I just booked the cheapest flight available, which was the at the time the United Airlines flight to San Francisco direct. So that was just a few months or a bit, I can't remember, a few months or 1 year before SQ launched the same flight. Yeah, it was really not a very good experience because you have to sit down for a long period of time, and the in-flight entertainment on United was atrocious, and the service was no better. So yeah, you're stuck in this cabin that with horrible service and horrible in-flight entertainment, and the food was
You're stuck with it for like
yeah
20 hours. Okay, not 20 hours, like 15 hours.
yeah it was really
Yeah,
bad.
so actually I think that's a good point. You know, if you're traveling for like, you know, long haul flights, right? I think the minimum cabin you should take fly on is premium economy. Because I think if you're going to travel like 15 hours in a flight, I feel like economy space is not enough. Like, you know, you just risk yourself traveling on economy for 15 hours. It's like, it's really bad. I mean, of course, like, if you take all those better flights, they do make it up, you know, in terms of their service and food, entertainment system, like that. But just, you know, based on the seating and just your personal comfort, physical comfort, I would say you just have to take premium economy, like bare minimum. Because from my personal experience, you know, when I flew to US, of course, you know, I did learn from your experience.
Yeah, because I
Yeah, I
couldn't
did
sleep
decide not to take economy and of course avoid United Airlines.
in.
And actually flying on, so I flew on Singapore Airlines and I would say that 16 hours was pretty enjoyable. Like I didn't find it tiring. I didn't find it, you know, like bad or anything. It was really good. And I think that was also mainly due to the fact that I did take premium economy because the amount of space you had for movement, you know, just to do normal stuff and it just makes your 16 hours less tiring. And once you land there, you know, you feel quite refreshed and not, you know, full of, you know, tiredness and, you know, that shag
Deep vein
feeling.
thrombosis. We should down to
Yeah,
all.
yeah, yeah. The DVT is a big problem for those long flights.
Yep, and I really regret. I please, if you're going to the West Coast of the US, please just take Japan Airlines or Korean Airlines. Go take have a transit in Seoul or Tokyo. Don't fly the direct unless, as Gerard said, you're taking premium economy or business class. If you want to go by economy class and save money, please just go by a transit flight.
Okay, so Santosh, let's give our tip then. So tip number five. I think both of us have like varying opinions on this. So I'll let Santosh go first. Like he feels it's the best way to approach a flight.
Oh
Wait, 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 let me do
okay,
the
sorry.
thing. Come on, you
Let me
suggested it. I need to do it.
the
All right, go.
Okay, so I think the most important aspects of the flight, that when you're evaluating which flight to take, I think the most important aspects of the flight would be looking at the service, then followed by the in-flight entertainment. So this is descending order of importance. So the most important is service. After it's in-flight entertainment, food, and then the check-in process. But I think the check-in process is really much very based on the airport, not really the airline. So yeah. Then and also you have to take into consideration the destination. So is it a long haul flight? In that case, does the airline vary? So if you're going for a short flight, then maybe you would just go for the most affordable one. But for a longer flight, you would take into account the other factors of, for example, is there a transit in the middle? Or yeah, that sort of thing. So that's my tip.
For me, I look at it quite differently, okay, because I think there are two ways of looking at a flight journey. So if you are, you know, like if you're like me, you know, the kind who thinks that your entire traveling experience begins from the moment you step into the airport, then I feel you should personally go for the best flight available. And for me in that regard, Singapore Airlines does, you know, trump all other flights hands down. Sorry, Santosh, I know you're a Emirates fan, but
No,
yeah.
that's okay.
But you know, if you know, I do have from some friends, you know, who's, you know, their school of thought is that, you know, flights are just merely a way to just get to your destination and return back to home. So if you have that, you know, that kind of thought process, then I think you can go for a budget flight or the cheaper options, you know. But of course, like, I mean, you try to be reasonable because if it's a long journey, then avoid budget as much as possible. But yeah, if you have that kind of a mentality, then probably want to go for the cheaper ones out there, and also, you know, just travel.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
All
that's
right,
my next
so I
point.
think we're almost halfway there.
Yeah.
So once you have landed overseas, right, I think one of the most obvious things to do is to get to your accommodation and check in. So I think that brings us nicely to our next point, which is accommodation. So nowadays with like Airbnb and stuff, right, accommodation is just it's not limited to hotels alone. And you know, there's like we have a lot of options now. So Satish, what do you think? You know, what is the best way to choose your type of accommodation?
I feel like, okay, based on my experience, I think that service apartments provide the best value of money while at the same time providing you with spacious accommodation. So when I say service apartments, I'm sure most of y'all will be thinking Airbnb, but it doesn't have to be limited to Airbnb. There are many service apartments that operate like hotels, so you can book directly to their website and that sort of thing. Then they are not privately owned homes, which are like sort of rented out as Airbnbs, but rather they are like service apartments that are built as like hotels. It's just that they're not small. They're not like hotels in the sense that they don't provide room service and that sort of thing, but they are proper apartments that are furnished for your living. So
So this was from your which
yeah,
experience?
so
Like
based on when I traveled to actually most places I stay in service apartments. So when I traveled to Melbourne and Sydney in 2015, in New Zealand 2016, the US 2017 also I stay in service apartments. 2018, yeah, I also stay in service apartments in Perth. Yeah, so most of my experiences have been in service apartments. I have gone to hotels before, like when I went to Switzerland, and I felt that the hotels were very the rooms were much smaller than compared to service apartment accommodations. So that's why I feel that service apartments are the best form of accommodation in my opinion. Yeah, I think Gerard, also during our Japan trip, our because we stayed in both a hotel in Tokyo and then Osaka, we stayed in an apartment, right? I think the hotel room was a bit smaller than
Yeah.
Osaka. Yeah, generally Airbnbs are more spacious. Yeah, so that would be my tip, right, to go with service apartments.
But I think hotels in they're generally more credible or more reliable, I would say. I feel like in that aspect because you know you have like a 24/7 concierge to like go to, you know you have like, I think it's like more you have other people you know who are living in the hotel so you don't feel so strange and stuff like that.
I know what you mean. Yeah, but actually some of these service apartments, actually it kind of depends. Some of them are just homes that are rented out through Airbnb, but some actually are real service apartments. Like they operate like hotels, in the sense that there's like a whole building just full of these service apartments, and there's a concierge to check in and that kind of thing. But the only difference is that they don't provide room service and other amenities that you might expect from a hotel. So if you want to check out one, is Meriton Service Apartments in Australia. So they are something like a hotel, but they provide service apartments instead.
Okay, for Airbnb, right? If you're talking about Airbnb, I think
Yeah.
what do you think about Airbnb? Because it's not really like a it doesn't have a concierge, it doesn't have room service, you know, all those kind of stuff. Then how would you rate Airbnb?
Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with you in that sense, huh? Because how do I rate it? I think that, I mean, based on my experiences so far, the Airbnbs have turned out okay. Like they aren't
Yeah, I mean,
scams
from my
or
experience also,
they aren't
it's
like
pretty
really
good.
nasty so far. Yeah, so thankfully. So I can't really comment, but I guess in theory definitely stuff could go wrong, huh? Because there isn't a, like as you mentioned, a concierge and that kind of thing. So in theory it could go wrong. Especially I remember in Japan we also had a frightening
Yeah.
experience because we had
So
an
that's the
issue
one
with the
thing.
passcode,
That's
right?
what I was trying to ask about the concierge and stuff because, you know, when we traveled to Osaka and then I think we reached our
Yeah.
apartment like pretty late at night. It was like past midnight. It was like 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning. Then no, we couldn't go in because
Yeah.
first of all, everything there was in Japanese. So and our knowledge of Japanese is like pretty bad. And so just trying to enter in, right, it was very hard because we couldn't follow the instructions that we had, you know, on our phone, and just to apply it there on the screen. You know, it was extremely hard because we couldn't really match it up. We didn't know what to do, and we couldn't contact the host because he was sleeping. So I think that was like a huge problem regarding the Airbnb. Then, eventually we spent hours, trying to get that right. I think we went through a lot of possible combinations, and finally we went
Yeah,
in.
lucky you had the ability to call the call center to resolve
So I think that's there, but I think hotels are generally good
it.
also. Like hotels are
The
service
only issue I have
apartments,
in
and I
hotels is the
think
space. Sometimes it's very small.
they provide a better service, like overall. Like you get baggage storage and stuff like that. So, and you also get like food, because these hotels will usually have like some restaurants inside. So sometimes they offer you like free breakfast and things, and a gym, things that you can really use, like amenities that you can use for yourself in the trip. But that's not another thing, right? I mean, no, I don't know about you, but what do you think about like staying at relatives' house? Because I think that's something that I do for most of my trips.
I think that staying in relative's house definitely, I think it's okay because I also did so in Perth in 2 years ago, I think. And I think that when you do that, you really get to live like a local, quote unquote, because you are living in a local's house essentially, and you get to hear the stories about how it is living there.
Like nothing beats the knowledge of a local, right?
Exactly. So
So
it's not like you're not doing the touristy thing or staying in a hotel or a service apartment or anything. Rather, you're really living in a local's house and you're seeing their practices and how they live day to day, and you're learning from them how they do it. And best thing is FOC.
I mean, it's not entire FOC,
I mean,
but yeah, I know it's definitely
cheaper,
like the
yeah, it's a
cheapest
cheaper
option
option.
available. And I think you do get a lot of benefits, like just interacting with them. Sometimes they might tell you places to visit that you might not be able to find online. Like online will not show you that that's like a that's as a place
Definitely.
to visit, but these people will know, those hidden gems in their own countries, and they also might give you some like valuable safety tips and stuff like that. So I feel staying at a relative's house is also like a good option, lah. I mean, I know everyone does not have the luxury of staying in a relative's house or knowing someone there, house you can stay with, but I feel like if you have the opportunity to do so, you should like, really go for it, because with their permission as well, because it just makes the whole trip better. You also don't feel homesick, stuff like that. It's just you have a much better experience exploring the country. So I think with that safely, we can come up with our sixth tip, which I think I will just round it off for all of y'all. Right, so tip number six, I think just go for a cheap, convenient, and easy option, because I think eventually, right, the chances that you'll be spending a lot of time in your hotel is pretty low, because you will spend like majority of the time sightseeing and traveling around. So if it's if it's just for breakfast and like sleep, I'd say just choose the ones which has like good amenities and
Oh, and
are
location
value
as
for
well.
money.
Must be decent. I know
Yeah,
location
location is
has to be
another thing important. You don't
decent.
want to stay very far away from city center or like stuff like public transport near you and stuff like that. Yeah, so I think that's a good thing. Actually, talking about location, I think that just nicely brings into our seventh point, which is mode of transport. So I think for mode of transport, it's going to be different. So let's just discuss the pros and cons of each type of travel before arriving at our tip. So Santosh, tell me, what do you think about public transport?
So I think in my opinion, public transport is a very good way to see certain cities, so certain places. So places like Japan and Korea, which
Like those big metropolitan cities, right?
generally not all big metropolitans though, not
But
all.
most of them are
I think
pretty well connected, right?
yeah,
At least the city center.
I guess. I mean, I think LA has, I don't think LA has very good public transport, even in the city center.
And it does have a downtown, right? No.
I don't think it'll
I didn't take the
be
metro, but
effective anyway,
I
even
think
if
it does
they had it. I
exist.
think NYC, I've never been to NYC, but I think from what I heard from you, NYC has it's quite well connected here in train.
Yeah, then New York City has like tons of, I don't know how many lines it has. So many lines.
I've seen their train map before. It's like mind-boggling.
Yeah, London also. If I'm not wrong, I read somewhere that the tube coverage of central London, right, is twice as much of Singapore, and it's like half of Singapore size. So
Wow.
that's like a times like of like four factor, you know, of like train
Yeah.
station density we are talking about. So it's like so close, right? I mean, like one station or next station, you can literally walk. It takes like 5 minutes for you to walk.
That's in the case of these kind of cities which are very well connected, I think public transport is the best way to go. Like Japan, Korea, similar as well. Like traveling between, like I think some of the stations are really very close and they are near most of the attractions that tourists want to visit. So going by public transport allows you to pay as you go, so you don't end up wasting any money. And normally public transport isn't that expensive. Plus, you also get to have the experience of taking the public transport together with the locals.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, that's true.
But of course, in certain cases, like most places, okay, I guess in Australia and New Zealand, you can survive with public transport in the city center, but most of the tourist attractions that you want to visit
They're
won't
out
be
of it,
accessible by
right?
public transport. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that case, then renting a car would be the most the most the best option lah, because it allows you
I
to
think you
travel
should talk
anywhere you
about
want.
renting a car because I have like zero experience regarding it because
Oh
like none of
yeah,
my
because
no one in my family
yeah.
drives and
Except you now.
okay, now I know driving but I've not used it overseas, so I think
Yeah, I
Santosh, I think
think
if you can talk the best about it. Like, what do you think are the advantages of renting a car? Like, what can possibly go wrong?
because renting a car will allow you to travel to literally anywhere you want to in the country you're going to. So there's no place out of your bounds, you know. No place that's out of bounds. You can go anywhere. So places like California, down under like Australia and New Zealand, most of the time if you want to travel and see what the country truly has to offer, you will have to rent a car. So renting a car normally, especially in these countries, renting a car is like quite cheap compared to Singapore because cars are ubiquitous. So
Yeah. But the insurance can be quite high, right? Because I think usually from what I heard, like you have to pay a lot for insurance. Like in the US, I think when we rented a car, like when my cousin rented a car, it was, I think the insurance was greater. The cost of insurance was much higher than the cost of renting the
The
car
car
itself.
itself. I remember because maybe because of his age, right? Our cousin is quite young, right? About 30 or 20 plus.
Yeah, 30, you know.
Because I think if you are like, because most of the time we use my dad's name, so usually the older you are, the cheaper the insurance. Because I don't know why they trust older people more. So yeah, I think that lowered the cost of the insurance a bit. But yeah, normally the insurance is there. You can normally choose how much insurance you want as well. So if you're relatively confident with driving, then you can choose the cheapest insurance. Then you can, but if you're not so confident, then you can buy the more expensive one. So normally, my family will take the in between, so not too expensive but not too cheap. But yeah, my dad thankfully is like quite a good driver. So far we have not met with any accidents overseas. But if you're traveling to a place with a lot of ice and snow, sometimes you have to rent. Okay, not sometimes, all the time you have to rent the chain.
Four-wheel drive,
You have
right?
to get a four-wheel car, or if not, if you don't have a four-wheel drive, then you have to get the chain. There's no chain on your wheels, so that will cost an additional fee. And also, it's a bit dangerous to drive on icy roads because you're not used to it. It's a bit slippery. And also, there's something called black ice, where the ice is like very hard to see, so it looks almost the same as the road. So you end up skidding if you're driving too fast. So yeah, these are potential dangers if you're driving in a wintry place. But if you're not traveling to any place with ice or snow, or you're not traveling in that season, then I think if you're traveling to places like California down under, you definitely should rent a car. But for the other places we mentioned earlier, which have relatively good public transport in the city, you may consider public transport as well.
Actually, some countries like, okay, I think another aspect of transport, right, it's just not limited to traveling within a city. It's, sometimes it's about traveling from one city or another. So in that case, right, I think they do have some options like trains and flights. So in that case, you know, like how does it work? Because I think for countries like Japan and UK, the train like network is so extensive, right, and it's like of high quality that it is worth more to travel in trains as compared to like taking a flight. Because it's cheaper, you know.
I think we can look at our Japan trip where we traveled from, like when we are going to Osaka, we traveled by bullet train, but coming back to Tokyo, we took a domestic flight. Right. I think that the train was a more memorable experience compared to the flight because the train allowed us to experience sitting in the train. And like if it was whichever at night, but if it was daytime, you could have seen looked out the window and seen the scenery and that sort of thing when traveling the train.
Yeah, I think that's like a added advantage of, traveling in like trains as compared to flights because of the scenery and stuff. But then, right, I think one common misconception that people have is that trains might take a long time, like the traveling time, because usually flights, like from one city or another, it's like 1 hour, 1 hour 30 minutes max, like those domestic flights. But I think what people do not realize is that, like those ch you have to count in those check-in factors, because if you're taking a domestic flight, you need to be there at the airport at least 2 hours earlier. And then, you have to, once you land, arrive, you still have to wait for your luggage. And usually the airport, it's not like in the city center. It will not be close to the city. You still need to travel. You still need to take a train or a taxi to go to the city. But I think when you take trains, right, even though it's like a bit longer, I don't think if it doesn't exceed by 3 4 hours, I think one should take the train now, because the whole journey of traveling the train is much better. And if I'm not wrong, they usually like bring you to the city center compared to like airports, So I think trains is something you should go for lah. And I think we still have one more option, right, which is taking a ferry. So we have travel, land, air, still have sea. But because when I went to there's no other option, right? When you're going to like Bintan or Batam, the only option is to take a ferry.
The only option is a ferry for these places.
Yes. So I think it also depends on like what options you have. Like I personally had an option to take a ferry when I went to Greece, when I was traveling from Athens to Santorini. I had the option of taking a ferry, but I think we decided against it because, one, it's like a very long time, so it takes about like 10 hours, because apparently the ship goes really slow compared to, and the flight only takes you 1 hour, and so I think that was a major factor. So if you have time, if you want to go for something more pleasant, and if you like the sea, I think ferry might be an option that you guys can look at. While traveling from one place to another. So I think that brings us to our seventh tip. So I think we both agree that if it's a really well-connected city, then public transport is a really good option. But if you are traveling to a country which has more attractions out of the city, like Melbourne or Sydney or SF, stuff like that, I say it's a and it's not that well connected, then you should rent a car. And for longer distance travel, trains are better than domestic flight. Am I right?
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. All right. So okay. So now let's talk about the main aspect of everyone's trip, which is attractions. So I think attractions are just not limited to the iconic and like those big ones, like Disneyland, Eiffel Towers, etc. I feel you can categorize attractions into three different groups. So you have the big ones, the star, global brands, famous attractions, those stuff. Then you have local tours and scenic sites. So I think you can categorize them into these three different categories. So I think let's talk about the pros and cons of each and one of them, each every one of them. So Satish, what do you think about big attractions? So those like Universal Studios, Disneyland.
I think
Do you
that
think it's like where to go?
yeah, I think that usually these sort of theme parks are a very big attraction because they are a global brand and what this means is that the theme of these brands is normally very well known. So most people living in a modern world would know about Disney, would have seen movies made by Universal Studios, that kind of thing. So that is a big draw because the theme is something that many people have in common. So the theme parks are very popular. And I think that usually these theme parks don't disappoint. Like the rides are usually up to par and
Yeah, I mean they are reputed globally for a reason, right? So I think they usually live
exactly.
up to the standard.
Yeah, so I if I wouldn't criticize anyone for visiting them, but it's just that they are quite expensive. So if you have room in your budget, certainly go for it. But if they are too expensive, maybe you could consider going for local theme parks, which are a bit cheaper and allow you to see the local culture better as well. For example, Everland in South Korea, which is a theme park. Actually, it's quite similar to Disneyland, but it's not really owned by Disney. It's like a spin-off of Disneyland. So it's a bit cheaper, and you can see a bit more of the local culture in the theme park. Yeah,
Actually,
but
I'm
if
talking
you
about like these local attractions and tours, right? I think we also went to, I think we went to the wine tour, winery tour in Kyoto,
Oh
if you remember.
yeah.
And I think those like small, you know, like attractions, or like not really attractions, like these museums, that kind of stuff, they are owned by
Yeah.
local people.
Yeah.
And I feel they usually have a like the kind of information they provide, you know, it's like it's something that you would not get off Google, you know, it's something that you would not, you know,
Yeah, yeah,
experience
yeah.
in those like normal attractions. And I think it's like it's really like it's much more believable, I would say, coming up from them, you know, than just
Yeah.
going to Eiffel Tower and just reading a, you know, a piece of slate that says, you know, the history of this and blah blah blah.
Yeah. Like, you really can find out more about the real, like, local culture,
Yeah.
right? Yeah. That you wouldn't, like, you learn something new. Yeah. So that's why, yeah, sometimes local tours are a bit better than simply visiting these global brands.
And then talking about attractions, right? I think the we have scenic attractions and man-made attractions. I think we did cover some points earlier, but so what do you think? You know, like countries like Australia, US, Canada, right? They have like some very scenic attractions. You know, like natural landscapes. You know, you have the 12 apostles, six, what's sisters? Three sisters. Six
Three
sisters.
sisters,
Three sisters. And then you have like, you know, those Yosemite, Niagara Falls and stuff. I think, what do you think about these? You know, I think they are extremely beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. They are beautiful. And we actually ask you, how much is the admission to Niagara Falls? Is it very expensive? Or is there even an admission cost?
Okay, it depends. If you want to look at the Niagara Falls, right, I think it's absolutely free. So just viewing the Niagara Falls is free. But if you want to get close to it, you know, like really close to the falls itself, or if you want to do that boat ride that brings you very close to the falls also, I think you have to spend, you have to fork out some money. And if I'm not wrong, the boat ride is like can go up to like $200 per person. Yeah.
I see. So I think that, yeah, in some in these cases, scenic places are really like a win-win situation because you get to experience breathtaking beauty while saving money on visiting these man-made attractions, you know. And sometimes, many of us in Singapore, because you are from a concrete jungle, we really just want to
Yeah.
visit somewhere there's white spaces, beautiful landmarks and structures. So visiting scenic places definitely would I think in my opinion is a first choice for most Singaporeans in terms of attractions, unless you really crave shopping in a different country or seeing man-made structures in a different country, then you can focus your traveling mainly on these. But in my opinion, I would go to a foreign country to see more of the scenery.
Yeah, so I think so I think we can come up with our A tip. So I think don't miss out on the big ones because I mean they are big and popular for a reason. But having said that, I think you should not limit yourself and only visit those kind of attractions because nothing beats the sight of a natural scenic beauty. So I think that's why we have for attractions.
So I think for me, everything in moderation. Visit a variety of attractions like theme parks, cultural heritage sites, and natural scenic locations, which will allow you to have diverse experiences without wasting too much
Yeah. Okay, so next thing we have is food.
money.
So I think talking about food, right? I don't think it's something that everyone plans for on a day-to-day basis. I mean, excluding our Japan trip, which we didn't even follow, but I think it's very essential because no matter what, you know, you do eat every day. Like you might go a day without sightseeing, but you do not go a day without
Yeah.
eating. So what do you think? Like when you go overseas, right? What kind of food that one should eat? You know, like should they try local food every day, or should they still, you know, also try their own food, their home
I
food?
think
I don't know. What do
I
you
think
think?
you should experience. I mean, you have a lot of meals to take, so I think you can try all local food, your own cultural food, and you can even try cooking your own food. So there's these three aspects of food when you're visiting a country: whether to choose the local food, Indian, to choose local food, to choose your own cultural food like Chinese food or Indian food, or cooking your own food. So yeah.
Okay, so let's talk like about each one of them, okay?
Yeah.
So you're talking about local food, right? What do you think about local food?
I think that is the best way to experience a country. So in the US, when I went there, I tried to eat Mexican food as much as possible, because over there where I went, there was a lot of Mexican restaurants, because it's quite near the border with Mexico. So yeah, you really get to try the authentic flavor of Mexican food. When I went to Australia, I did try their local pizzas and burgers, which are quite nice. Which are quite nice and quite different from the ones you find here. So yeah, sometimes the flavors of the dishes may be.
I think that's the biggest point, you know,
Yeah.
because even when I went to Santorini, right, I had like Mediterranean food every single day, like every single dinner, and I feel it was like very, very different from what you get in Singapore. Like the taste that I had there, right, was like simply out of the world. It was really, really different. In Singapore, I was just like meh, but when I went there, you know, initially I was quite hesitant on having it, because I was like, based on my previous experience of eating it in Singapore, and I was like, it's not going to be great. But I think once you go there and you have their authentic food, it really shows, you know, how great it is, and you know, like just and why you should have local food when you travel overseas.
I think, yeah, definitely. You should definitely try local food for the authentic flavors.
And then the next thing is, so your home food, or like your comfort food. So in our case, it's going to be Indian food.
I think most of the places,
Yeah, I
yes.
mean, okay, I'll say this is my expertise
Sure.
because of how my family finds an Indian restaurant in almost every city overseas, and has at least like one meal there. But I think once in a while you can have your own like home food. I mean, it's not wrong, because you know it's something you're familiar with, and it's something that you personally enjoy, right? So I feel it's good to have it, but the only problem is that it might be more expensive, because like, you know, if you're going to a country like like Greece or something, you know, if you're gonna find that one Indian restaurant, of course they're gonna charge you very high for a plate of biryani or something. So I think price might be a problem, but you know, I think it's good to have your home food once in a
Yeah,
while.
I agree. I think that it's also a great chance to try how the Indian food there is, so that you can like, I don't know, just so you know how it is, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, so you can better appreciate the Indian food you get here in Singapore.
Okay, so
I think that's
cooking
one
your
thing
own
that I
food.
learned. And I think the last thing is cooking your own food, right? I think cooking your own food is like more applicable to the people who stay in like service departments or Airbnbs and stuff like that. But I think it's a cheaper option, because, and if you're going with a large group, you know, if it's your family is quite big, you know, the cost you spend on food is cheaper per capita. So I think in that case, you know, I feel cooking your own food is much better. But then again, you know, on the downside, you know, you have to spend a lot of time. There's a lot of time consumed in just preparing and making the dish. So again, you know, comes down to square one, you know, how much time you have left, or how much time you can, you know, spend in a particular place. So if you have a lot of time, then of course, you know, you can cook your own food. If not, I think you're better off just having meals on the go and traveling some local food.
Yeah, so especially if you're going to a country where the sun sets quite l early, like in winter, and things close quite early, like Australia, New Zealand, things close at like 5 or 6. So you have plenty of time. If there's no other attraction, the sun has set already, you have plenty of time to spend cooking to save some money.
Yeah, so that's true. So let's go to our tip number 9. So I think local dishes must try. It gives insight to the country's culture as well. And but having said that, you can also have your home food once in a while so that you can see how much it differs, usually, for the worst overseas and compared to your home country. And it's also good to have your comfort food, once in a while. So that, just keeps you going. Okay, Santosh, so let's move to our last but very important point of discussion, which is safety abroad. So I think it's something that we take for granted in Singapore, but I think it's a real issue out there, in some of the countries. And so do you want to share, any experience you had regarding safety?
So I think that fortunately I haven't had very serious, touch wood, I haven't had very, very serious safety issues when traveling. Most of the time it's relatively minor things. So I'll just share one of the experiences I had when I was in Los Angeles in California about in 3 years ago. So when I was over there, I did experience a bit of a scam where there were like these two ladies dressed up in black, not black, bat cat, bat woman outfits. So what they did was
You mean
they,
Catwoman?
cat woman or bat woman? Cat woman.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Catwoman outfits, and what they like just came up to us and just like started like taking photos, like they really, we were just randomly walking down the street, and like these two ladies, they were quite big size, like just like, and they were wearing these shoes, they just came to us and they started grabbing us and like taking, well, one of them was grabbing us, like holding us in place, and the other one was just taking photo with her camera, and then like they started demanding that we pay them for the photo.
Oh, okay.
And like they were like demanding like not in like in a very nice way, like a bit of threat, quite a threatening way. So
They are
we
quite
did give
demanding,
in
eh?
to the pressure and pay them for the photo, which I regret now, but it was
Yeah,
most unfortunate.
I think safety, when you look at safety, right, I think it's very important, right? Because in Singapore, we are quite fortunate for the kind of high safety standard we
And because of
have.
that, we are quite naive as well.
Yeah, but then like when you travel overseas, right, it's like a totally different ball game. And I went to like okay, I had this horrific experience I have to share, right? I was in Rome, okay. So we were taking the metro. We were on the way to the Vatican City, and I think it was the first time that I saw a very planned pickpocket attempt that happened right in front of my eyes to my mom. So in the metro, right, once people get in, we had this like two girls who was like who were standing between so there was I had one girl, who was standing between me and my mother, and then there was another girl who was standing between my dad and my mother. So I was like, okay, I mean, it doesn't come off as something abnormal because the train is usually quite crowded, and you are like you're trying to find a space in there, but it was kind of off because right, that train was not that crowded. It was pretty, it was like it had a lot of spaces left. And then these two girls, right, they were like acting as if, like there's no space, they have to like really squeeze in. They had like that kind of facial expression, and that immediately rang a bell. And it was like, okay, fine, something is gonna happen. I just had to be like quite vigilant of my surroundings. So I immediately touched my back pocket, I touched my front pocket, I just made sure my things were there with me. And I was the thing was right, I was really like focused on my belongings because I thought they were going to do something to me. But little did I know, right, there was this third girl who was standing in front beside my mother, and she was opening my mom's bag. And my mom was like trying to look for me because I was like behind her, so her focus was on me. So with her attention being diverted and my attention also being diverted by another girl, the third girl had like easy access to the handbag, and she was like opening and removing stuff.
So how was she opening it? Like, was she just opening the zip, or did she cut like a hole or something?
Like she was opening the zip,
Oh,
like
okay.
they were very discreet about it. And then like I think my mom like felt it, luckily, and then she like saw it and she screamed. And then I was like, oh shit, I was like, I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh my god. And then that's when the doors were like closing. And you won't believe this, they literally like forced open the door. Like the door, imagine the MRT doors are closing. They forced opened it, and the three of them just ran with like some stuff from my mom. which are basically like receipts and some useless stuff. But yeah, I know when you go overseas, right, you know, these kind of pickpockets and petty theft, you know, it's really common. And it's so common, right, that the other passengers in the train didn't even react to it. They were just like, oh, it's normal. Like when my mom was asking, you know, a lady was traveling on the train, she was like, oh, this is pretty normal here in Rome, you know, like it happens every day. You know, you just can't avoid it. So I think it's an issue, and I think everyone needs to like read up on those safety. I mean, you don't read up a lot, but you just have to know like some common, you know, problems or safety issues that travelers might face in a particular country, and just pay closer attention to it.
Yeah, you definitely have to be more vigilant, and just yeah, make sure you're not subject to these kind of crimes.
Yeah, and also like don't go out at night, because like I
Oh
think generally when I went to US, right, I
yeah.
think the one piece of advice that my cousin gave is like do not go alone at night, even
Yeah.
if you are in city, you know, like even if it's like downtown LA, he was like it can get pretty unsafe at night, so he just say like just don't go and just stay as a group and just go
Yep.
together. So I think we can come up with our last tip. So for the very last time, let me just ring the bell. All right, so our last tip is, I think, take note of like the local emergency contacts, avoid dark and like secluded places, and also be careful of your belongings everywhere you go, you know, because crimes do not happen, you know, openly, and having seen so many tourists, the scammers and thieves usually know their way of you know, taking hold of your stuff and belongings. So I think you just have to be extra cautious whenever you visit a place which is very crowded, or you know, just everywhere you go in general, and especially at night, just be extra safe. All right, so that brings us to the end of our 10 points of discussion regarding travel. So I hope our tips are useful to all the future travelers out there. You know, I know it's not really a you know, applicable and appropriate discussion at this point of time because of all this COVID-19 pandemic, but I'm sure that we will start traveling again and enjoy the way we used to previously without any restrictions. But I think we can still talk about how travel will be like post the COVID-19 pandemic. I think especially for the next couple of years, you know, depending on how fast we can eliminate the virus. So let me pose a question to our guest, Santosh. How do you think traveling will change in the coming years? You know, what do you think is going to be considered as the new normal in traveling?
Well, okay, I think that there's a lot still unknown because there's a lot of things about this virus that we still do not know. But I feel that if when not if I hopefully I don't when countries start to open up, it will start with certain countries. That means like each country will only open air corridors with certain countries in the initial stages, in order to ensure minimal like spreading of the virus. So we Singaporeans may only be able to visit certain countries. Like the government has said, China and Australia and New Zealand for now. I think they're gonna open air corridors. So for now, these are the only countries. The initial stages, this will be the only countries that we will be able to travel to. Then after and along with this restricted number of places that we can travel, there will also be fewer seats on planes because likely they will want to implement some form of social distancing on planes. So flights may become more expensive because the supply of seats is lower.
Yeah, that's true. Team traveling might get much more expensive.
Yeah, especially the flights. And I also think that it will also become more cumbersome because we may have to do health declarations, temperature screenings. They may even require compulsory swab tests if the tests become cheaper to produce. And masks may have to be worn on flights.
I think you have to wear. I think Singapore Airlines just
Yeah.
recently rolled out a commercial, right, on
Yeah.
how flights are going to be like, how traveling on flights are going to be like.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely going to be very different.
But it's quite ironic because they did say that they're going to be meals first, right? So I don't know how they're going to serve meals and be wearing masks at the same time.
I mean certain things are going to be hard to just restrain yourself from doing. It's like very hard to practice social distancing in certain
Exactly. It's like things are really not very effective in terms of
but I
social
think
distancing.
what they're trying to do is at least try to minimize contact as much as possible, like just minimize unnecessary contact. So I think that's how traveling is
Yeah, I
going to be
guess.
like, a lot of tests, a lot of restrictions on the place you go. There could be mandatory quarantine in certain countries. So I mean it's looking gloomy for now, but I think hopefully things will change in the future and we come out stronger from this.
I think in the near future, traveling will not be what it was, but normalcy will slowly start to return over the course of the next 1 to 2 years. So that's something we can be optimistic about.
Actually, what do you think about something that our bio teacher usually says in class? He usually says like, visit a country post a disaster or attack because it's cheaper. Do you think it applies to the current situation? Like, do you think people will still, risk it and like travel to other countries while the pandemic is still ongoing?
I think that the reason he said that was you're talking about probability, right? Like if a country has an earthquake once, or if a country has been struck by a terrorist attack once, the chance is going to happen again, in succession is lower because what was the chances lightning will strike the same spot twice, right? But in this case, this virus is quite, I don't think it's really based on probability.
I think
It's
it's not really applicable to this situation,
quite
right?
savage. Yeah, I also don't really think it
Yeah. That's still quite funny when he said that, though. I remember in class, I was just like, what? Why is he saying that? He was like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't go to this country, once a terrorist attack takes place because they're usually more safe and like things are cheaper. So yeah, I think so guys, I think that's it from the two of us. I hope we have enlightened you all about travel. And let's meet again next week in another episode of Gibberish with Gerard with another guest.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Gerard. And thank you so much to our listeners for listening to us.
Yeah, and trust me guys, next week is going to be super duper fiery. I can guarantee you guys that. And so yeah, so do continue to give me your feedback. And until next week, goodbye.